this opportunity to welcome all those who are visiting with us. We want you to know we're happy that you're here. We hope that you'll spend a few moments after services that we might get better acquainted. If you have any questions concerning things that are said or done, we'll be more than happy to sit down with you with an open Bible and to come to a better understanding of the things contained therein. It's our hope and our prayer that we speak and say those things in accordance with the Word of God, that we might encourage you and edify you, and that we might worship God in spirit and in truth, and do so in a way that brings glory and honor to His name. Whenever you talk about the subject of the providence of God, there are two people that come foremost in your mind. One of them is the young man, Joseph. A few weeks ago, we talked about him and how God's providence led him through his life and the events that took place in his life in order that God's people might be where he wanted them to be, and that is in Egypt. And then the story continues. But another person that always comes to mind when we think about the providence of God is the story of a young queen named Esther. I would ask you to take your Bibles out and turn to the book of Esther. The story of Esther is a wonderful story and an example that cannot be underestimated in showing the providence of God. As we begin the study this morning of providence and the study of Esther, I want you to turn to chapter number 4, and I want us to read together verses 13 and verse 14, because it is the foundation of why this book is an example of God's providence. And the scripture says, "And Mordecai told them to answer Esther, 'Do not think in your heart that you will escape in the king's palace any more than all the other Jews. For if you remain completely silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place. But you and your father's house will perish. Yet who knows whether or not you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this?'" I want you to notice the statement, "for such a time as this." The things that happen in the book of Esther demonstrate that God's hand is behind this. In the book of Esther is the only book in all of the Bible that God's name is never mentioned. It is not mentioned throughout the whole book, but you would be remiss not to understand that He is in every page, in every action, and behind every thought that is carried out in this great story. And so we want to begin by looking at some of the King Xerxes. Now, King Xerxes is called that by the Greeks. And he reigned in Persia from 486 to 465 B.C. His empire was made up of over 120 provinces, over which the Jews had been scattered as a result of the Babylonian captivity that we read about in chapter 2 and verse 5 and 6. His dominion extended from the borders of India to Ethiopia. Xerxes reigned from, as I said, from 46 to 465, and he is remembered mostly for unsuccessful war that he waged against Greece in 480 and 470. He led 2 million soldiers in battle against the Greeks, and only 500 of them lived to tell the tale. And that's sad that that's the greatest remembrance that we have of this great king was his failed battle. The Jews were scattered as a result of the Babylonian captivity. And during that time, this king arranges for a royal feast. And that's really the background of this city. In 483, he gave a royal feast in Shushan. And he arranged to do it in the royal palace to show and display his power and his greatness. This feast lasted for 180 days, in which the royal guests drank and the royal wine from individual gold cups. Wine was served in great abundance to all that were present. And while the men were eating and drinking, Queen Vashti was also entertaining the ladies in another section of the kingdom. Now, after becoming merry with wine, according to the scripture, It says that he petitioned his wife Vashti to come and parade before his guest in order to exhibit her beauty. Now I want you to look at chapter number 1, and I want you to look at verse number 12. But Queen Vashti refused to come at the king's command, brought by his eunuchs. Therefore the king was furious, and his anger burned within him. And so she refused to come to parade herself. And scholars say either it was to parade herself in an immodest way, and some even say maybe in the nude, but there's nothing in the text that tells us that. But whatever he wanted her to do, she felt it was undignified and inappropriate, and she refused his command and would not come to exhibit herself before the drunken guest. And because she refused that order, that set in motion the things that take place in the book of Esther. Now, as we study about this, I want you to look down at verse number 19. Because of her failure to do this, it was determined that God, or the king, is going to do something according to his counselors. Look at verse number 19. It says, if it pleases the king, let a royal decree go out from him, and let it be recorded in the laws of the Persian and the Medes, so that they will not be altered, that Vashti shall come no more before King Ahasuerus, and let the king give her royal possession to one who is better than she. Now what this is she is going to be replaced. And she's going to be replaced by someone that's more suited, and what that means is more obedient to her husband, because if this thing gets out that Queen Vashti has rejected the command of her husband, it will cause all the wives in the kingdom to rebel. And so they convince him that she must be replaced and she must be put aside. Now, in order for that to take place, all the virgins in this citadel are brought before the king. And all of the virgins in the kingdom of Persia are chosen by people who are around the king, and they are going to go through a beautying process. And Esther was one that was chosen of all the virgins in that citadel, and here is how it worked. She had not revealed yet that she was a Jew, and she did not reveal that because her uncle Mordecai told her not to let people know who she was. But how did this process take place? Well, each woman spent a year in preparing. She would get different skin treatments. She would have different things done and beauty procurements of the day. And she would go through all of that process of preparing for 1 year. Now, this was true of all the virgins that were brought in. Now, then the king would call each virgin one at a time and spend one night with the king. And then she would be sent away. Now, those that were not chosen, all of the virgins who did not please the king or he failed to choose, were not ever allowed to marry. They were put in a separate place in a house, and all their needs were taken care of by the king, and they became the king's concubines. But now during this procedure, each of the women are brought, and they're given anything they want in order to come before the king. Now that is the setting of what's going to take place. Now for a moment, let's take a look at the major players. The major player is Mordecai. Now Mordecai served the king as a gatekeeper. And he served the king as a gatekeeper according to chapter number 2 and verse number 5 through 7. And he would sit at the gate, and he would allow and withdraw and forbid those who entered or denied them entrance. But while he sat at the gate, he refused to bow down to another major player, and that is a man named Haman. And we'll talk about him in just a minute. But I want you to look with me in chapter 2 and verse 19. In chapter 2 and verse 19, Esther has been chosen the queen of all the virgins. She pleased the king the most. She has yet to reveal to the king that she is a Jew, because that is the instruction of her uncle. But look at verse number 19. When the virgins were gathered together a second time, Mordecai sat within the king's gate. Now Esther had not revealed her family or her people, just as Mordecai had charged her. For Esther obeyed the command of Mordecai as when she was brought up by him. In those days, while Mordecai sat within the king's gate, two of the king's eunuchs, Bigthan and Teresh, doorkeepers, became furious and sought to lay hands on King Xerxes. So the matter became known to Mordecai, who told Queen Esther, and Esther informed the king in Mordecai's name. And when the inquiry was made into the matter, it was confirmed, and both were hanged on a gallows. And it was written in the book of the Chronicles in the presence of the king. Now, what happened is that he reveals an assassination plot against the king. And they make inquiry, and the queen tells her husband that there are these men in your kingdom, they're seeking your life. He makes an inquiry, finds out it's true, he hangs them on the gallows, but he does nothing to reward Mordecai, but he records it in the king's records. Now you remember that, because it will come to play a part. But Mordecai is not the only major player. There's another man named Haman. And Haman is really the prime minister. And look at chapter 3 and look at verse 1 and 2, and we'll see the character of Haman. And all the, it says, after all these things, King Xerxes promoted Haman, the son of Hametha, the Agagite, and advanced him to sit his seat above all the princes who were with him. And all the king's servants who were within the king's gate bowed and paid homage to Haman. For so the king had commanded concerning him. But Mordecai would not bow nor pay homage. Then the king's servants who were within the king's gate said to Mordecai, "Why do you transgress the king's commandment?" And so Mordecai would not submit to this worldly exhibit of honor. He would not bow, and he would not submit to the king's command. He refused to do it, and so that set something else in motion. You see, Haman was full of himself, and he wanted this great honor and glory, and he wanted men to respect him, and he wanted men to honor him. And it just burned him that Mordecai would not pay this respect to him, and so he devises a plan. What is the plan? Look at chapter 3 and beginning of verse 6. He devises a plan. But he disdained to lay hands on Mordecai alone, for they had told him that the people of Mordecai. Instead, Haman sought to destroy all the Jews who were within the whole kingdom of Xerxes, the people of Mordecai. Now, what he has determined that he just doesn't want to kill, he doesn't want to just kill Mordecai. He wants to eradicate the Jewish nation. He wants to erase every Jew that lives in the kingdom. He wants to take them and put them to death. Now, how is he going to get that done? He devises a plot. He got the king to consent to the plot. Look at verse number 10. And so the king took his signet ring from the hand and gave it to Haman, the son of Hametha, the Agagite, the enemy of the Jews. And the king said to Haman, "The money and the people are given to you. Do with them as seems good to you." And then the king's scribes were called on the 13th day of the first month, and a decree was written according to all of Haman's commands, to the king's scribes, to the governors who were over each province, to the officials of all the people, to every province according to script, and every people in their language. In the name of King Xerxes, it was written and sealed with the king's signet ring. And the letters were sent by couriers to all the king's provinces to destroy, to kill, to annihilate all the Jews, both young and old, little children and women, in one day, on the 13th day of the 12th month, in the month of Adar, and to plunder their possessions. A copy of the document was sent and issued as law in every province, being published to all the people, that they should be ready for that day. And the couriers went out and hastened by the king's command, and the decree was proclaimed in Shushan the citadel. So the king Haman sat down to drink, but the city of Shushan was perplexed. And so the king consents to the plot. And on this day in the 12th month, every Jew within those 120 provinces, every man, every woman, every child of any Jewish descent is to be put to death by the decree given by the king through Haman. Now, what we want to do is we want to see how all of this takes place and how God is behind the scene. Now, before we get into the steps, I want you to remember something. In Genesis chapter 12, God told Abraham that through his seed, all the nations of the earth would be blessed. Now, God's people have come out with their land and their inheritance. They have been taken into captivity. They will come out at a period of 70 years, but it won't do them any good if the Jewish race is made extinct by Persia. How is he going to bring his son, and how is he going to bring the lineage of all the nations of the earth to be blessed through the Abraham descendancy if the Jews are eradicated from the earth? How is that going to be done? Well, it couldn't be done. And so something's going to have to happen in order that the Jews would be spared this plot by Haman. Now, how is God going to do it? What God's going to do is he's not going to directly intervene. You remember what we talked about providence? That providence is God's part of the equation. I want you to notice as we go through this that God's will is going to be done, and he does not directly intervene in any sense of the word. But his will is done. Now let's see how. Let's begin with step one. Step one is Esther is the queen. Esther is in a position, she is a Jew. She is the queen. She is next to the king. She is in a position that she can gain some advantage for the Jews because she is queen. Now, upon the census of Mordecai, she goes before the king to intercede for the Jews. But there is a law: if the king does not hold out his golden scepter to call you to his presence, and if you go before him without being called, you will automatically be put to death. That is not just true of anyone, that's also true of the queen. She cannot come in his presence to make some petition of him unless he is called, if she is called by him. And so if you notice, in verse number 16, I want you to notice verse 16. It says, go gather all the Jews who are present in Shushan. Fast for me, neither eat nor drink for 3 days and nights. My maids and I will fast likewise. Saying, I will go to the king, and if I perish, I perish. She knows it's against the law. She knows that she's risking her life. But if she perishes, so be it. Now, in her actions, she shows great courage, that she's willing to go to the king on behalf of her people. Now, in step one, she chooses to risk her life. Now, this tells us that Esther has a noble character. But after she goes, the king sees her, and he holds out the scepter to her. Look at verse number 3. Look at the beginning of chapter 5. We're going to read verse number 2. So it was when the king saw Esther standing in the court that she found favor in his sight. And the king held out to Esther the golden scepter that was in his hand. So Esther went near and touched the top of the scepter. And the king said to her, what do you wish, Queen Esther? What is your request? It shall be given to you up to half the kingdom. Why did he hold it out to her? Why did she risk her life? And now she can make a request. What does she request? Well, get rid of the decree. No, that's not what she requests. Look at the next verse. So Esther answered, If it pleases the king, let the king and Haman come today to a banquet that I have prepared for him. Now, she asked that there be an audience of the king and upon with Haman, that they might come together for a special banquet. Now, she invited them to another banquet after that banquet. And that takes us to step two. Haman encounters Mordecai the night before the first banquet. You know, he's all happy. In chapter 5 and verse 9, when he's told that the queen is throwing a special banquet for him and the king, why, he's just full of himself. He just thinks, who is greater in all the kingdom that the queen's going to have a special feast just for me and the king? And on his way out, how happy he is, who does he run into? Mordecai. And he's not bowing. And he's not paying homage, and it upsets him. Now, look at verse number 9, chapter 5. So Haman went out that day joyful with a glad heart. And when Haman saw Mordecai in the king's gate, and that he did not stand or tremble before him, he was filled with indignation against Mordecai. Nevertheless, Haman restrained himself and went home. And when he was set and called his friends and his wife Jewish, then Haman told them of the great riches and the multitude of his children, everything in which the king had promoted him, and how he had been advanced above all the officials and servants of the king. Moreover, Haman said, besides all this, Queen Esther invited no one but me to come with the king to a banquet that she has prepared. And tomorrow I again am invited by her along with the king. Yet all of this avails me nothing so long as I see Mordecai the Jew sitting at the king's gate. Then his wife, Zeresh, and all of his friends said to him, let a gallows be made 50 cubits high, and in the morning suggest to the king that Mordecai be hanged on it. Then go merrily with the king to the banquet. And the things pleased Haman, and he had the gallows built. And so everything seems to be falling in place. Or does it? You see, but something happens that night. The king can't sleep. He's restless. And so in order to be able to go to sleep, he calls for one of his scribes and wants him to read from the king's chronicles. Now, look at chapter 6. Look at verse 1. That night the king could not sleep. So one was commanded to bring the book of the records of the chronicles, and they were read before the king. And it was found written in the written that Mordecai had told Bethana and Teresh, two of the king's eunuch and doorkeepers, how they had sought to lay hands on King Xerxes. Then the king said, what honor or dignity has been bestowed upon Mordecai for this action? And the king's servants who attended him said, nothing has been done for him. So the king said, who is in the court now? Now Haman had just entered the outer court of the king's palace to suggest that the king hang Mordecai on the gallows that he had prepared for him. Now you get this picture. Here is Haman coming before the king, who now has just had the chronicles read, that knows that Mordecai saved his life, and no great honor had been given to Mordecai. And here is Haman getting ready to ask the king to put Mordecai to death. That seems like a paradox to you? But you know what? The king wanted a question. The king says, let Haman come in. I want to talk to him. Look at verse 6. So Haman came in to the king and asked him, what shall be done for the man whom the king delights to honor? Now Haman thought in his heart, whom would the king delight to honor more than me? And Haman answered the king, for the man whom the king delights to honor, let a royal robe be brought to the king which the king has worn, and a horse on which the king has ridden, which a royal crest placed on his head. And let this robe and the horse and delivered to the hand of the one, the king's most noble princes, that he may array the man whom the king delights in honor. Then parade him on horseback through the city square and proclaim before him, thus shall it be done to the man whom the king honors. What a plan. This man is going to be exhilarated. This man is going to be placed in a position where everybody can respect him. What does the king think of Haman's suggestion? Then the king said to Haman, "Hurry, take the robe and the horse as you have suggested, and do so for Mordecai the Jew who sits within the king's gate. Leave nothing undone of all that you have spoken." Can you imagine the horrified look on Haman's face when he realizes he's going to have to take the man that he came in to ask the king to put on the gallows, to put him on the royal horse, to put a royal robe on him, to put the crest on him, to lead him throughout the city and let everybody proclaim and honor and respect him. What a strange turn of events. How difficult do you think it was leading that horse around? Haman is forced to honor Mordecai. Now, then he goes home. And when he goes home, then he has another problem. Look at his wife's statement in verse number 13. When Haman told his wife, Zeresh, and all of his friends everything that had happened to him, his wise men and his wife Zeresh said to him, "If Mordecai, before whom you have begun to fall, is of Jewish descent, you will not prevail against him, but you will surely fall before him." In other words, your plan is not going to work. If Mordecai is a Jew, then your plan is destined to fail. Now, about that time, the second banquet. Remember that second banquet? At the banquet when Haman and the king were there, the first banquet, he said, "Now what do you want, Esther?" "I want one more banquet. And I want to make it in honor of Haman." And so now it's time to go to the second banquet. Now, in chapter 7, they dine with Queen Esther. Now she's going to tell the king what she wants. And the second day, at the banquet of the wine, the king again said to Esther, "What is your petition, Queen Esther? It shall be granted you, and what shall be your request? Up to half the kingdom it shall be done." And Queen Esther answered and said, "If I have found favor in your sight, O king, as it pleases the king, let my life be given me at my petition, and my people at my request. For we have been sold, my people and I, to be destroyed and be killed and be annihilated. Had we been sold as male and female slaves, I would have held my tongue, although the enemy could never consummate the king's loss." So King Xerxes answered and said to the queen, "Who is he? Where is he? And who is dared to presume in his heart to do such a thing? Who is the man? Point him out." We all know who the man is, don't we? So King Xerxes answered and said to Queen Esther, "Who is he?" Esther said, "The adversary and the enemy is this wicked Haman." So Haman was terrified before the king and the queen. The king is so angry that he leaves. The king arose in a wrath and a banquet of the wine, went to the palace garden, but Haman stood before Queen Esther pleading for his life. When he saw that the evil was determined against him by the king. Now he's pleading for his life, but he makes a fatal mistake. Look at verse 8. "And when the king returned from the place of the garden to the place of the banquet of wine, Haman had fallen across the couch where Esther was, and the king said, 'Will he also assault the queen where I am in the house?' And the word left the king's mouth, they covered Haman's face." And you know what happened? The gallows that he built for Mordecai, they took him up and they hanged him on those gallows. Now, but this still leaves a problem. What about the decree? Haman's dead. But what about the decree? What about the decree to render extinction to the Jews? Well, that's the next step. Who's given Haman's position? Mordecai. Mordecai is now the prime minister instead of Haman. What about the decree? Esther asked that the king make a new decree to override, not to override the first decree, but to make a decree that the Jews can defend themselves on any that would seek their life, and they're able to, in their own protection, kill anyone that would try to take their life. And he sends out that decree. The king issues a new decree. And with the new decree, the Jews receive permission to defend themselves, and they defend themselves, and they are not erased. They are intact, and none of them die. Now, let me ask you a question. Do we see the hand of God in all of this? Do you see the hand of God in all of this? An orphan is taken in by her cousin. She could have been taken in by anyone. She could have been taken in by another relative. But she's taken in by Mordecai. Next, what if she had gone to another relative's home? What if she went to another brother? What if she went somewhere else? She would not have been in the place where she needed to be. What if she had refused? What if she had revealed her identity to the king when Mordecai told her not to? Wonder if she had a. What if she had told the king early on that she was a Jew? Would she have been chosen as queen if she had told him she was a Jew? The decree sent out because the king held out the royal scepter. Wonder if he didn't hold it out? Wonder had he not seen her and he did not respect her and he did not love her, he never would have held out the scepter to her. But he loved her and he respected her. Why? Because of her character. Mordecai was a man of wisdom and intelligence, but this man outfoxed himself. He was so smart, he was so wise. Mordecai knew to be faithful to God, he would see him through. You remember what Mordecai told Esther? If you choose to be silent, go ahead. But if you don't deliver us, deliverance will come from another place. But you and your children will die. Being queen won't protect you from this decree if you remain silent. But you know what? Mordecai wasn't worried about it. Even if Esther would not have done it, he was not worried that God would have delivered his people. How was Mordecai yet alive to be appointed prime minister? How is he in a position to enact the second decree? Why is he in that position? Because of his faithfulness to the king when he uncovered the plot. What if the king had not been restless that night? You ever think about that? What the king had not lost sleep that night? He'd have never heard those chronicles read. And Mordecai would have, and Haman would have came in and asked Mordecai to be hung, and he'd have been hung. But that didn't happen, did it? How did it happen that Mordecai's good deed had been overlooked? Why wasn't he rewarded at the time that it happened? We don't know. But it wasn't, was it? How did a young Jewish orphan become queen over a whole world empire? How did that happen? How did all the virgins that were in that province, how was this Jewish orphan picked of all the other virgins? How? And here's one. What about Queen Vashti? How about if she didn't have any integrity? How about if she didn't have any propriety about her conduct? How about if she would have just submitted to her husband's wishes and paraded herself before those drunken men? Didn't happen, though, did it? You know why it didn't happen? Because of the decisions and the character of each individual that we read in this story. Because of the modesty of this woman, that is why all this story takes place. Now, Let me ask you a simple question in closing. God's name's not mentioned. But do you see the hand of God in all this? God's hand's in there. But you know what? He didn't have to do a thing. He just let the characters and he let the choices be made by those involved, and the character of the people involved made all of it work to the glory and the honor of God. You see what? He didn't make Vashti say no. He didn't make the character of Esther. She had that character herself. Mordecai had that character of himself. And Haman was full of self-pride and arrogance, and he did himself in. All God had to do is let it play out. But you see the point? That's how God's providence works, ladies and gentlemen. God lets us make the decision. God lets our character make the decisions, and then God is going to work his plan according to the choices that we make. There is no greater example in all of the Bible of God's providence than the story of Esther. A woman who had great courage, a woman of noble character, and a woman that was willing to place her life in the hands of God in order to save her people. There was nothing done by divine intervention. But you see the hand of God behind every step. Because you know why? Because God had influence in the life of Mordecai, in the life of Esther, and in the life of the people of the Jewish race. And because of that, and because of the decisions they made, God protected his people. And we know how the rest of the story comes out, don't we? Because God brings his son through the lineage of Abraham, because the seed is left intact. Please take your song books out and turn to the song that has been selected. Brethren, the story of Esther is to demonstrate to us as God's people that God does not have to do anything miraculous in order to get his will accomplished. God had a plan, and that plan included sending his son to this earth to live and to die and to offer his life as a sacrifice upon the cross. And every step of the way from Genesis chapter 3, verse 15, to the time that Jesus is hung upon that cross, all along the way, there are many steps. And at every step, God is working his plan. He never intervened to give man free moral agency, and he allowed man to do the choosing, and then he worked his plan. If you're here and you're not a child of God, God is not going to directly intervene in your life. It is his will that you be saved. 2 Peter chapter 3 and verse 9 is God's desire that all men be saved, but he's not going to reach down and he's not going to make it possible for you. You're going to have to take that step yourself. He's done everything he can to make it possible for you. Sent his son to die. He shed his blood. You can have redemption. You can have forgiveness of sin. You can enter Christ. You can have all spiritual blessings. And you can do his will if you choose to do so. Esther had to choose to go before the king. Mordecai had to choose to be faithful to God and not to bow and to pay homage to Haman. He made the decisions. He made his. God made his. What will your decision be today? If you are here and you are a Christian, you need to make correction in your life. We're here to pray with you and for you. If we can help you in any way, we bid you to come forward and together we stand.